Blog Talk Radio.
And everybody should know that's how love goes. It's good for the soul.
Oh, I got a long way to go, but it won't stop the pain. No, no. That's the kind of thing that keeps me coming back again and
Good evening, good evening. Welcome tuning in to the Healthy Soul Talk Show with your favorite therapist, Dr. Kimberly Thomas. Checking in live on Facebook and Blog Talk Radio. Come on in, come on in, come on in. We know we have a busy evening, but the time is winding down, letting you know you still have time to vote. I know some people are en route to do so, and thank you to all of those who already voted. I was one of those early voters, so I got out there last week because we know this is a very, very important time, right? So so while you're standing in line or on your way to the poll, thank you for tuning in. If you're tuning in on Blog Talk Radio and you want to join in on the conversation tonight, you can dial 323-870-4375. Again, that's 323-870-4375. Press 1 to join us. If you have any questions or comments or feedback, you can email takingthelimitsoff@comcast.net. Find us on iHeartRadio as well as Spotify. Again, thank you for tuning in to Dr. Thomas and the Healthy Soul Talk Show, where we offer full services for mental health, individual, family, couples, anger management, domestic violence for aggressors, you name it. We provide that service because we believe in a holistic approach. All right. Are we ready? Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord.
Mic check.
It's a beautiful day today. It's such a beautiful day. Right, you know, to get out and do what we need to do. It's not windy, it's not raining, right? It's not snowing. It is beautiful, right? It is so beautiful. Okay, so I'm thankful for that we have some great weather. If you have to stand in line, whether you did that this morning or you're doing it right now, enjoy this beautiful weather that God has blessed us with. So we are going to be talking about a very vulnerable topic this evening. And so I just want to put a disclaimer out there that, you know, this is a very vulnerable topic for a lot of people. We're talking about suicide among a special population, which are our children. And I know that some of the things we will get into may spark some emotion. Some people have gone through it, whether it was our own child or someone close to us, niece, nephew. We know that there are people who are listening or will listen to this and, you know, have to reflect on those things. But I feel like this is a very relevant topic because in the Black community, suicide among our Black children is on the rise. And so we're getting to a place where we're able to provide the data to support those findings, and now we have to shift into making sure we provide the tools or the resources needed to address the problem. And so, you know, tonight is just really exploring how we can push this agenda forward, because it's a crisis at this point, right? It's a crisis at this point that we need to make sure that our children, starting as young as five, right, that we observe and be aware of and be take preventative measures as well as intervention to address this issue. All right. And so, again, if you can share this, if you're listening, if you know someone who could use this information or just want to chime in to talk about their experience or even how they help their child through these moments, please do so. You can join us on Facebook Live or on Blog Talk Radio to provide those comments. All right. And so, you know, we always start out the show with some fun facts, but I know due to the nature of what we're talking about, I wanted to make sure, you know, we provided more of some statistics, some current statistics with the first part of the show of, you know, did you know, right? And so just kind of starting this off, I wanted to research where we were in Chicago with suicides and how we were tracking them. And so I found something. There's an article that recently was reported this year around July that said that Cook County, specifically Chicago, reported that by July of 2020, 57 Black people had committed suicide. And when you think about that, right, that was by July of 2020. And obviously we know that due to the pandemic, due to, right, we have many things going on where we're experiencing grief. We know that there may be more to that number. But as of at that point of July, when this research was done, 57 people had committed suicide in Chicago. And so, you know, with that alone and thinking about, so I work a lot with the forensic population, and we study suicides in jail. And we know that those numbers were high. And if you all read, you know, the articles online and keep up with that, you'll know that people of color just in our criminal justice system, right, also has a high rate of suicide that we need to pay attention to. So with that being said, you know, understanding that we're in a crisis with this particular reporting of how people of color, specifically Black people, are dying, suicide being at the top of the list. All right. The next fact we have is, did you know, this is according to the Journal of Community Health, that did this longitudinal study from 2001 to 2017 that stated that the rate of death by suicide for Black boys ages 13 to 19 rose 60%, while the rate for Black girls skyrocketed to 182%. Right? And so when you think about that, and you say, okay, right, we have this time frame we have to think about. That was at 2017. And so these reports, right, when we're studying years of a report, they come out at a certain time, right? And so we noticed that, right, from 2001 to 2017, there was a significant increase among our Black boys ages 13 to 19, right, as well as our girls, which was 182%. And so that's why we're talking about this. We're going to get into, you know, for me, it was really, what do we talk about tonight, right? Even if it's a continued conversation into next week, right? How do we begin to really slow down, pace ourselves, and think about how suicide is impacting, right, our generation? Okay, and so, you know, later on, I'm going to bring up a few suicides, you know, that's happened in our community and what those factors were, because we need to pay attention to the facts that contribute, right? The risk factors. And then we need to talk about the protective factors. What can we actually get in front of or begin to pay closer attention to with our kids, especially living in an age of social media, bullying, a lot of trauma is going on. And so we need to be so aware of how our children are really being impacted, right? It's not, you know, we got to tear down this stigma associated with, you know, kids don't experience any mental health issues or kids don't feel anything or, you know, they can be exposed to something and they'll forget it. That is so not the case. When you think about that, especially with, you know, adults who are in their adulthood and they are just now addressing things that happened in their childhood, those things never leave you. Right. And so we need to zone in on just because they saw it at this age, shift ahead 5 to 10 years, they have forgotten about it. It's just false. Right. We really have to look at, you know, what we have learned within our culture, how things stay with us, ranging from relationships to us being successful in careers, on jobs, the hurt, the pain, the guilt, betrayal, all these things that manifest themselves when things are not addressed, right? And so that's where we're going with this, right? It's just having this open conversation about what's the starting point to this, all right? So, Mr. Producer, are you ready?
Not really, but go ahead.
You know, I did have another did you know fact.
Okay.
Yeah, you preached on Sunday.
Oh.
Well, yes, you did.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I'm like, what? I almost had forgot what you were talking about. Like, wait, what? You caught me off guard with that.
I caught you. I was, you know, on Facebook.
The Lord is blessed.
And I said, who is that? I said, all right, take the text.
The Lord is blessed.
Tuned up. I was like, all right, go ahead off. Yeah, you brought the word. I just want you to
bless
know
the Lord.
You blessed the house.
Bless
you
the
blessed
Lord.
Us on Facebook.
Hey.
With that message,
come
right?
On. Bless him.
Yes. All right. So here we go. I wanted to dive into first. There is a report that was put out by the Emergency Task Force, right? The mm-hmm. report from Congress, from the Congressional Black Caucus,
mm-hmm.
which was an emergency task force on Black youth and suicide
okay.
in mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they put together was, you know, and I know that I want to, you know, post it on the Facebook page. It was an interesting read in terms of the research done on those statistics that I just mentioned, how the rate of suicide is increasing among our children and the lack of funding, right? The healthcare disparity,
mm-hmm.
The stigma associated with it and what they wanted to do about it. So they actually proposed a Pursuing Equity in Mental Health Act, H.R. 5469 bill here that they just met about it, right,
mm-hmm.
in
mm-hmm.
the House, right? The Senate on September 30th, this was updated on the website where they approved, right, to move forward with funding that would invest in our children of color.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that this was very important. Now, I did not know about this particular act here until I started doing some real research on what was the investment going to be. And so I'll post both of these because this is like the starting point, right? When you think about, all right, how do we dive into to know what's out there for us, right? Who's fighting for us?
Mm-hmm.
Who's producing, you know, tangible information that we can read on and actually, you know, make sure we hold our, you know, appointed people accountable,
mm-hmm.
right, for investing in our children. And so definitely I appreciate that. And so I want everybody to understand that we can move this forward if we all take the time to invest, right, making sure that we get our kids the help that they need and reaching out, even without our school systems. I know there's a system that needs to be worked on as it relates to, you know, suicide ideation and suicide thoughts as they are presented in the schools. But this is where we push for the funding, right? Mm-hmm. What factors that contribute to that? And we know that we're still studying bullying and suicide. Not that bullying causes suicide, but what are the factors, right? What are the repercussions of being bullied, right? That could put a young child in the mindset of taking their own life. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. And so there was another study that was done by the Journal of American Medical Association that found that there was an elevated risk of suicide among boys ages 5 to 11. Mm. Now, think about that for a moment. Right. The Journal of American Medical Association, right, found that this was published in 2018, that there's an elevated risk of suicide among African-American boys ages 5 to 11.
Wow.
And so some of the things that went into that when they began to study and trying to figure out, you know, where do we even begin to look? We found that there was an increase in trauma, depression, and anxiety, mm-hmm. right? And so I know you, my producers mm-hmm. here work in the school system. Mm-hmm. And I know that when you compound the home life of a child, and the home life meaning the community, the neighborhood which they live in, which and include their family structure, right? Their family experience, and then have to go to school. That kid doesn't turn off that switch, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're going through the day, and most times we see grades are not where they should be, or there's a change in behavior. Would you all say that you know, children who experience trauma and depression and anxiety, it's a regular thing that you all see in the schools among this age group?
I would say absolutely. We have one of the biggest things that I know, if I could just speak about our particular school, is that we don't have enough social workers.
Mm, okay.
We don't have enough people to don't say that. I'm saying we don't have, but I'm. Right. I'm saying, okay, I'll put it this way. We still don't have enough, meaning that for the amount of kids that I could visibly see that have trauma issues,
mm-hmm.
there isn't enough. Put it that way, because they are, you have a lot of them walking around with, we have a lot of kids that go to anger management, right? We have a lady that strictly deals with, anger management, and her hands are full all day, every day.
Okay. Because we're diffusing right there.
Yeah,
right? Particular behavior.
Trying to.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And these are only kids that have been identified. This ain't dealing with the ones that have yet to even be diagnosed.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think it's one of those situations that runs. I don't like to use the term, but it runs rampant. I think if it's that level with us with under 400 kids, imagine what it is in the larger public schools.
Right.
Yeah.
Let me welcome those who have come in. Hey, Lisa, my cousin, and Minister Cox, how are you? Thank you for tuning in. Feel free to post your comments or call into the show. You know, one of the things I think about is, you know, how do we get the children the services they need when they are, you know, in school, right? So we know they have to be there, but how do we pause the school day, right, to provide them mental health services? Right. And so I know the obligation of the school. You have to provide a certain amount of, you know, academic hours and, you know, classroom hours. So it can be very challenging, but that still doesn't position that child or children to get the help that they need. Right. And so, you know, another thing we have to take in consideration, you know, these historical factors where we have a stigma in our community, right, about receiving counseling. You know, and so I like the word prevention.
Yeah. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Because intervention really means that we're stepping in, right, to help someone manage or regulate or, you know, cope with or you know, process. But prevention means we get ahead of it. right? Mm-hmm. If there's certain things we know that's going on in our communities, in our homes, right? How do we get in front of it, right? To say that this is what we want to prevent from happening. This is what we want to minimize, mm-hmm. right? You going through and not make you feel as though something is wrong with you. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, you know, definitely that stigma around our culture, even as it relates to suicide, right? Thoughts of suicide, right? It was really presented that, you know, and I used to hear this years ago. Black people don't do that.
Yeah, that
right?
That is always,
you know, they had another phrase, but, you know, I want to be respectful, right?
Ninjas.
You know, in terms of like, you know, it was something where okay, when you mentioned the word suicide, it was just this immediate reaction of, you know, Black people don't do that. Mm-hmm. And so now we look at that and we say, okay, let's pause, right? Something's happening here. There's a shift, right, into now taking a look at, okay, you said we didn't do that, right? So how now do we have this crisis going on where now we need to zone into it, right? And so, you know, when you think about suicide in our children, you say, okay, what could possibly be going on in this child, right, for them to think about suicide? And I want to you know, shift into talking about post-traumatic stress disorder. And essentially, that means that this particular child, this child has been exposed to a trauma, right, that caused significant distress. Mm-hmm. And if we just think about everything that our kids are exposed to now in the urban setting, right, the urban setting is community violence. You know, that was one particular neighborhood that I was working with where the kids were saying that they would see, you know, dead bodies lying on the ground on their way to school. So this is the vision that they have in their head, right, when they walk into school. Or the school is on lockdown, right, you know, 3, 4, 5 times a week because there's shooting going on outside. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Or personalizing it more, that their fathers have been killed. And for some of them, they were in a car, right, when their parent was killed. They still live in the same neighborhood mm-hmm. where their family members, right, are gunned down or, you know, violently killed. That they're watching, you know, their parents fight each other, right? Mothers are being, you know, significantly abused, right? Trauma. And drugs are being used, right? Alcohol they've been exposed to, you know, severe drug use, right? Overdose on every corner, right? Addiction, right? All these things, all these elements, we say, okay, what do kids, what are they supposed to do with that? What should they do with those visions? Now that we've exposed them to this, they've heard the cries, right, of their hurting mother, right? They witness, right, that their loved ones die in front of them. They're on the scene, so they see what the first responders see, mm-hmm. right? So we know we have to help first responders, right, with their vicarious trauma. What makes you think our children don't need the same help? So what do they do with those visions? They have nightmares. They sit in class and they think about it, right? They have flashbacks, yeah. right? There's constant reminders mm-hmm. of what's happening. You live in the same neighborhood. You live in the same home, right? You're talking to the same person that sexually violated you, right? Mm-hmm. You're seeing them over and over again. And what are you supposed to do with this, but hold it in? So you're in emotional distress, right? You can't regulate your emotions. And these are kids. We're talking about kids, mm-hmm. right? A critical developmental stage that they're going through. What are they supposed to do with all of this stuff? So yes, I can say that I've talked to, you know, a significant amount of youth, right, that when it's reported that they don't sleep at night, mm-hmm. they're really trying to avoid not thinking about their traumas. Mm.
Which is why they're sleepy when they get to school.
Yes. Right, because they're trying to stay awake, right? They don't have the phone. Right. They don't have the videos. They don't, you know, they can't move around and talk to, you know, their friends all night, right? They're still forced to sit there, right? And still deal with learning in addition to these memories, this flashback, these recurring events that's going on through their mind. And if you think about what we're going through now, so we have the pandemic and we still have the violence in our community. So which means what? We're living in trauma right now. Mm. Our kids are at home learning from a computer, right? Some of them have been traumatized even more, right? With seeing different things on the screens, right? That's done to their classmates. Mm-hmm. They're living in trauma right now. So should we not be preparing to give them the mental health support that they need just based on what's going on now? Right? As a community, as a society, the mental health field should be stepping up, right? And creating plan of actions, creating platforms, creating outlets to support our kids and our youth, because right now they are living in trauma. So when the dust settles, who's going to be there? That's my question. The entire mental health profession. Mm-hmm. Who's going to be there for our kids when the dust settles? Mm-hmm. Are you willing to provide services if they don't have insurance? Are you willing to start support groups? Are you willing to go, you know, into a school or even if it's remote learning? What are you willing to do to help, right, our children and our youth that's in a crisis right now? That's my question. I just wanted to, you know, go off to that because clearly the signs are there, right? We could get back to textbook now, right, that talks about, you know, PTSD would probably be our entire nation, mm-hmm. which includes the kids. They're not going to grow out of PTSD, right? There's no such thing. That's going to happen for our kids. And when you talk about post-traumatic stress disorder, right, you know, what we often look for is how they're being impacted. Mm-hmm. That they're directly being impacted. They're witnessing this in person. We have social media who you know, we video everything, right? So it used to be where, you know, we ruled out, okay, anything they watch in movies or on television shows, we wouldn't add that into, right, being exposed to trauma. Mm-hmm. But now we have to include social media. It's inevitable, right, because everybody's video posting and sending it to you, right, whether you want to or not, yeah. you know, yeah. they're going to send it to you. Yeah. And our kids are watching this. And this is not in Hollywood. This is down the street. This is down the block. Right, that our kids are being exposed through social media, right? And so we have to take that in consideration because this is the new way, right, of being exposed to trauma. And so, you know, we have to understand too that if we don't get them help, then they can start to avoid, right? You know, I often hear where, you know, the kids don't want to go to certain folk houses or the kids don't want to talk to certain people or they don't want to visit certain places. And we don't listen to it because we're quick to say that they're what? Rebelling. Mm-hmm. Are they rebelling or should you ask them the question, did something happen? Mm. Right? If I just give you 2 minutes of my time and just probe a little bit more about why, right, or what happened, or how did something, you know, get you to this place that you want to avoid, right, mm-hmm. this particular road we're going down, mm-hmm. okay? But then also think about, you know, with a lot of kids, they begin to have somatic symptoms, so they have stomach aches, headaches, they don't feel well. Right. So before, if they didn't want to go to school because, you know, all of a sudden my stomach hurts. Right. These are some symptoms some signs that we miss. Right. With our kids who are really could be going through an emotional, right, distress moment that we kind of we don't minimize it, but we don't take it as serious, or we don't attribute it to something deeper like depression and anxiety. Right? It's almost like you ever had to get something off your chest, but you just didn't know who you could tell or when you should, you know, let it out. Imagine that 5-year-old, that 6-year-old, that 10-year-old, right? That 12-year-old that's holding this in and trying to figure out, what do I do? Right? And so really, really understanding that, like, because we're living in trauma, right? Our kids are living in trauma. We need to be mindful of their sleeping patterns. We need to be mindful of the things that they're telling us in our conversations and asking more questions. Because if it goes unaddressed, right, the symptoms exacerbate themselves. So what happens when they start thinking about that they don't want to be here anymore? Right? You know, when they start thinking about, you know, what if I just, you know, what if I just die right now? Right? And you know, I have to say, you know, again, because in our culture, we really don't think about talking about suicide, like that word alone, right? It's like forbidden in some of our homes, right? It's forbidden instead of some of our homes. Or, you know, I've heard people get cursed out, right?
Yeah.
When they said anything remotely close to, you know, I wish I wasn't here. Right? And I'll go even further that I've heard comments made like, you know, you go ahead and do something about it. Right? So definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
You've heard, you know, well, you know, don't, well, go ahead and do what you're going to do.
So
I can get on with my life.
Right.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, but true.
Right. Especially in the heat of, right? And if you really, really, you know, think about our kids, our teenagers, and, you know, when they say, I wish I was dead, or, you know, they send off those verbal statements, and we've never really taken that to heart. Right? Now, one thing we have not been able to really track is a suicide attempts. Right. So, you know, the carrying out of suicide. Yes, because, you know, oftentimes there may be a note or, you know, we can kind of piece together this. But one thing that's missing, that's this gap here is the focus on suicide attempts. Right. I've spoken with youth who have taken pills. Right. And, you know, I asked them, who helped you? Right. And they say nothing. I just woke up.
Wow.
Right. And as a clinician, when you listen to that, it's like, okay, so nobody knew you were doing this and nobody helped you through that moment. So you recovered on your own and you're trying to piece things together. You're trying to figure out, right, what's wrong with my life? And many of our children, many of our Black children and teenagers have already had attempts that we don't know about.
Wow.
That's something to think about.
And again, so I guess you are we talking about two separate sets of people? Are we talking about the diagnosed and the non-diagnosed, or maybe even the third set, the misdiagnosed? I mean, I'm not sure which. There's so many levels to this.
Yeah, so many levels. Meaning, we know risk factors, right? So we know the mental health issues. We know the external and the internal factors.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, we can study that they were diagnosed or they were not diagnosed, but we know some of the risk factors are the same, right? Mm-hmm. The trauma. Right. Family members who have carried out suicide or attempted. Mm-hmm. Right. We have certain factors that can come into play when we think about where a child is. Right. On their lethality of suicide. Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, with social media, you know, it has its ups and downs with that, right? So I remember there was this meme, a poll that was going around, you know, hey, post your suicide anniversary day, your thought of suicide, you know,
wow,
the last time you thought about it. But it was meant to be in a sense of you overcame, right? You got through that moment, mm-hmm, right? So I got the gist of it, but this is where those young people felt comfortable sharing because they felt like they were not alone, right? So that parent who may not have known, mm-hmm, right, that their child thought about it or attempted it and recovered it, you know, that says something for us, right?
Yeah.
As parents,
yeah,
right? Mm-hmm. That we need to tune in a little bit more. So when I talk about post-traumatic stress disorder, I'm diving more into the symptoms of,
okay,
right,
okay,
that leads to the depression, the anxiety, the insomnia, right, mm-hmm, the irritation, the frustration, the resistance, the rebellion, right, all those things you just said, right? That you could, what if they have ADHD? Well, sometimes it's not ADHD,
mm-hmm,
right? That's the quick fix because we can prescribe some medication to make them a zombie. Yeah, right? But that's not getting to...
That ain't fixing the issue.
Right, that's not fixing the issue.
Right.
Right. And so, yes, just thinking about, you know, I appreciate, you know, this act that's been, you know, pushed into, right, Congress, because it sets the tone for what we can fight for,
mm-hmm,
if we dismantle, right, that it could never happen to your child. Because my child don't think like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm too good to my child. You know, I prevailed the best life.
You got too much to live for.
Right.
Right.
You
got every pair of shoe and every,
right,
and
right,
every game console.
Right.
All that.
Right. And you know, we often try to put this out there. You know, there are other kids or families who have it worse. I don't like that. Right.
Yeah, because there's a million kids who would love to be in your shoes.
Right. Right. I you know, and the more we push that into our kids, it suppresses their voice, and you just minimize,
yeah, but it
their
made,
real feelings.
It made sense to us as parents,
yes,
to say that, because,
yes,
for one, it was said to us.
That is true.
It was said to us.
That is true.
Why we complaining? You know, it'll be my mother would tell me, there's kids on this block right now that would love to be where you at.
Right.
You know?
Right. Right.
So, absolutely. But you're right. It never isolated or put any attention to whatever my issue was.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And it doesn't position that child to process their emotions. It's like, suck it up.
Mm.
Right. And now I'm not going to share with you, because when I confided in you, you basically told me.
You'll be all right.
You'll be all right. It ain't that bad. You know, think about them folks in the other country.
Right.
Right, you know, so I have to go way over, right, to another country.
Right, them kids starving over there.
Right, right.
That's what I heard.
Right, right. So yes, understanding, and there's a couple of other things here. When you talk about suicide, you know, in our community, we have to look at their behavior, right? Mm-hmm. So their aggressive behavior, their irritable behavior, their hypervigilance, right? Their startle responses, their problems with concentration, right? Difficulty falling or staying asleep. These are things that we should not just brush off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you get up during the night and you still see your child tossing and turning, difficulty staying asleep, and you not say anything?
Mm-hmm.
They could be struggling at that moment, right? They could,
mm-hmm,
be struggling at that moment,
mm-hmm,
right? And in the upcoming, we're going to talk about self-harm, but just, you know, they're because our kids, you know, they go to school, so they got to be attentive there. When they get home at night, that's really their time to really go into that space. Right. So it's really, you know, paying attention to your child and their presentation and their demeanor and asking those questions. How are you feeling right now?
Hmm.
Right. And, you know, you I wish we can poll our kids and ask them how many times do the adults in their house ask them how they're feeling. How you feeling about life right now?
Other than how was school today?
Absolutely. Are you happy living here? Are you happy, right?
That's good.
In this family?
That's... See, I...
How am I doing as a mother, right?
Who gonna ask that question? It's two mothers sitting in here right now. How many kids you got?
Three.
And you've asked that question of your kids?
You know I have.
Huh?
Yeah, I have.
You have.
That's because I gotta be exception to the rule.
Right, because you the one, you like a real therapist. Let me ask the other mama in the room. Have you asked your kids that question? How am I doing as a mom? Like, literally in those words? I mean, for real?
And, you know, it's not so... And this again is where, you know, and I'm not going to say not coach, because I think in just that parental relationship, that's just not how it was designed, right?
Yeah, it wasn't
designed for us to ask or get feedback on our relationship from our children.
I you know what? I instantly went back to that scene from Fences.
Okay.
With Denzel Washington, when him and his son had their whole... blowout in the yard when he said I don't have to like you. That's what Denzel said to him. He was like, he said, I don't have to like you. All I got to do is do this and this.
Right.
He says, because I don't have to like you because the world ain't gonna like you. You know. So I'm you know, and he was harsh. He was
right.
Harsh, but I just don't think parenting, at least not. And I don't want to condemn black parents, but I don't think that's something that we've ever been taught. Was to ask your child, how am I doing as a parent?
Lisa says she's asked her children that.
Really?
Yes.
Maybe I'm
good
just
evening,
out of the loop.
David. Thank you for joining us.
Maybe I'm just out the loop then. Let me. Did your mom ever ask you that?
No.
Okay.
And you find out some real honest answers. Like, I just found out, like, you know, I yell too much and everything. I was like, why do you feel the need, like, to hide it from me?
Right.
Like, you know, one thing and you yell. And I was like, makeup. You know, of course I have a reason.
Okay.
I also told her, I said, how about all the time I have not yelled.
And with that though, it's like that question. My producer Tanya was explaining how she posed that question to her kids, and her daughter said she yells too much, right? Mm-hmm. But that opened the conversation, right? Mm-hmm. To say, okay. What about the good times? What about the good times, you know, we've had? But I think it lets some walls down, right? Because our kids today, they have this platform, right, where they're sharing with the other kids, right, about what's going on in their homes. And, you know, some parents have different types of relationship with their kids. And so, you know, they're yearning. Right, has been there. And so, you know, a lot in the old school parenting where you don't ask any questions, right? And you do what I say, you know, right now, and don't give me no lip back, and you don't have an opinion. But we're living in a different time right now, right? We're living in a time where because we really don't know everything that our kids are going through. And next week, you know, we're going to talk about bullying, right? I think that, you know, we kind of that deserves a, you know, its own show there. Bullying and suicide for next week. But just really looking at how well do you open the lines of communication with your kids right now? right? Do you ask them what they love about life right now? Right? Do you share with them? Do you really create this environment where if you know the trauma we're living in, how do you now talk with your children about the trauma that they're experiencing right now? Right? How do we talk about this? How do we talk about, you know, if your best friend or your friend, especially our teenagers, so many of our youth are losing their friends to violence. Sharing at home about how they really feel, right? What are they doing with all this stuff? They're just compressing it and it's just staying inside because we really haven't opened up those lines of communication for them to share. And they're exploding. They're feeling hopeless, right? When we think about suicide, you know, we put words like extreme, right? A lot of them have guilt. Right. A lot of them, you know, when they're losing their friends, they feel guilty, especially those who are there and they're witnessing this. Right. Or they have family members who have taken their own lives. We know that from a statistical standpoint, families that have a history of carrying out suicide increases the risk for a child. Right. To carry out suicide. And so we need not to underestimate or you know, downplay what we've already found, right, among children itself, whether they're Black, white, Hispanic. We know certain things that we now need to tune into with our kids and do these check-ins. Right? You know, especially when it comes to grief. You know, there's a lot of grief going on right now. They're losing their grandparents. They're losing, you know, their favorite aunts, their favorite uncles, their favorite cousins, right, to the pandemic or just even from natural causes. Please understand, right, that our children are under emotional distress right now. And we must wake up and pay attention. You know, you feel some type of way. Right? Imagine your children who or your child who does not understand death.
They can't comprehend it.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You, and it's happening frequently right now. Every time you turn on
every day
the news, all day. The TV, somebody calling the house, somebody texting, somebody mm-hmm. posting. It's all around them. Mm-hmm. So we have best where they can. And if they say, I'm tired of dealing with this, I'm tired of thinking about this, I'm, you know, my head is spinning. You know, I hear that phrase a lot these days. My thoughts just won't stop running. Emotional despair. This is real with our kids. They can't stop thinking about some stuff. Are you ready to listen and hear it? Right now. Yes, I can sit here and tell you that there are a lot of kids who are going through remote learning need some serious attention and emotional support right now.
Absolutely.
And this is for myself because I had to up my game. To provide emotional support for your child right now, just on the premise of going through this this remote learning experience, in this pandemic, in this social unrest, in the violence. Notice I can't stop naming off the list.
We can see it with some of ours, because when the classes are over, they don't, like the kids that are good, they log off with the quickness. They you ain't got to tell, like, you know, we have to make them stay. Because not only do we do a greeting when we greet them to come in, but we greet them, we recognize them before they leave. So we take attendance twice just to make sure they're still, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So when we're in the process of doing this, we don't get, there are those kids that leave right away. Then there's those kids who just stick around.
Right.
And we start asking the question, everything good? You all right? You had a question about the assignment or you had, and, And a lot of times it's just that we found out. And so when we're a little nervous or we're curious, we'll have our social worker pop into the classroom
on the
camera and just stick around so she can kind of, you know, maybe she'll see something that we don't see.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. I'm just in this space, you know, right mm-hmm. now to plea, right? Plea to every home that has a child in it to open up the lines of communication about trauma. It's real. If we want a, you know, short definition of it, right? It's an event, right? Mm-hmm. And in our case, we were still going through a traumatic event, right? Mm-hmm. That causes emotional distress, mm-hmm. and from that leads to specific behaviors, mm-hmm. right? And so how well are we paying attention, right, to our teenagers, right, our mm-hmm. youth, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, our teenagers are so unhappy right now. Mm. And again, you know, I know, you know, we talk about suicide. That's the carrying out, right? You are taking your life. But I don't want to push aside the attempts or the thoughts. Because mm-hmm. that's the leading into, right? So you know, I take it a step further to check your medicine cabinets.
Ah.
Right? Look in their rooms. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, let's not put on blinders.
Check backpacks.
Right. There you go. You know, and like I said, in a couple of weeks, we're going to talk about self-harm, right? Where you know, children can take their own life through ropes, belts, right? We're going to talk about some specific incidences next week, but mm-hmm. when you say how, the how, right? The how is what's in the home,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So paying attention, listening to them, you know, I know it's hard right now because you like, if I can just get a quiet moment in the house. Well, sometimes you need to question the quiet moments in your house. Because not all quiet time is used for decompressing.
But aren't there signs? I mean, I think we talked about this before. Aren't there signs of when kids who are normally outgoing start to retreat
mm-hmm.
back to silence? Start to retreat back to not making themselves hiding almost.
Right.
Right. Hiding because they don't want you to know, so they hide because they don't want you looking at them for too long.
Right. Isolation.
Yeah, that's the
right. Yep. So you know, and this is a tough one. This is a tough one because they're confined to their rooms a lot now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, rooms have become classrooms.
Right. And you know, you should be asking them to come out the room. You know, that's why this is kind of hard because it's like, you know, we have to kind of think a little differently mm-hmm. now. Right? You know, if your child consumes marijuana, right? And yeah, you know, it is what it is in terms of those parents who allow it. Mm. You know, if you need to be paying attention right now.
Mm.
Right? Or if you didn't know your child was consuming marijuana.
I don't have a problem.
And you know.
Is it on?
No, it's not. I don't hear you.
I can hear me.
Oh, okay.
And so I think we just went down on Facebook.
Yeah, I just saw it on that.
It's okay. Keep going.
So, you know, in terms of that part, right, understanding that we need to start asking questions,
mm-hmm.
right? So if they're not, why are you smoking, right? Well, I need to, you know, calm myself down and, you know, I'm frustrated. I'm aggravated. Like, let's just put aside the use of marijuana right now
mm-hmm.
and think about what message they're sending us.
Yeah, what's the real need?
To take myself out of my reality right now.
Hmm.
But what happens when smoking is not enough? Right? Because they need more. Right? They need more from us. Right? And so, you know, those are great points when you look at changes in behavior. Right? Some things are a little different because it's remote. We changing friendships and things like that. It's really about them not associating with their friends. Okay, so a lot of times, because Lisa said earlier this should have been a Zoom session. A lot of friendship, a lot of friends are doing the FaceTime and they're doing the Zoom calls, and they're doing the best way they can. But now we have to pay attention, right? We have to pay attention to when they are isolating themselves, so they don't want to talk to anybody. Right? So you know, just thinking about that, what is it they stop eating? Right? What child you know goes a whole day without eating? Right? What child, right, goes without eating? You know? And so these are things we can look more into if they're feeling not themselves, right? You know, I've been just hearing a lot as I you know, work with peers and just, you know, having our, you know, check-ins where when you talk about what our children are going through right now during this pandemic is really paying attention when they say, you know, I feel lonely. Right. I'm tired of being by myself. You know, my appetite is gone. Right. You know, these are things where we say, OK, in your developmental stage. Right. We know and understand that this should look different. So there's certain things we shouldn't be ignoring in our children right now. And also those who have been traumatized in other ways. Right. You know, it's. Our kids are being sexually violated. They're being sexually abused. And so some of them have had to be in the home all day.
Stuck.
Right.
With the same person.
Right. And if that child doesn't receive the support that they need, we don't have to anticipate them going into their adulthood having issues. They're going to have issues at that moment. Right. Because they need a way out. Right. And when you think about that and you say, OK, I need a way out. Right. To that child is, you know, let me do this. Right. And in their age reflects that, you know, death, you know, that we said most children don't understand that this final. Right. But I think that we can, you know, build a little from that they do know that, which is why among our black children. That's on the rise. They don't want to come back. Right? I told you this was happening to me. You didn't do anything about it. I'm tired of living like this. I'm tired of thinking about this. I'm tired of having nightmares. I'm tired of you making me do X, Y, Z. And they want a way out. So when they feel lack of support, the resources aren't there. Right? And as a society, as a community, we're not supporting our kids enough emotionally, suicide begins to rise. All right. And so, you know, I wanted to leave that there because this is just one part of it, right? Part one, right? Part one of kids and suicide is talking about, right, the trauma, the impact of trauma, depression, and anxiety. That can increase the risk for a child carrying out suicide. Okay, so I want to leave you with this. I want to leave you with opening the lines of communication with your child or your children, right? Moving forward. Check in with them. Ask them how they're doing. Ask them emotionally are they okay? Create an environment where they should be able to share with you anything that that's on their mind right there without penalty, without a lecture, without you going back to 1992, what you used to do back in the day. Right? Create an atmosphere that your child or your children can have a sit-down, open, honest, straightforward conversation with you about what's going on in their thoughts, right? What has happened to them, right? Ask them these specific questions. Create a safe place, right? Create a safe place for them to walk through the door, even if that means that if you're not in the greatest space, emotional space, to continue the conversation, mm-hmm. find them the resources that they need. So when they share that information, you should begin to reach out to say, okay, let me find someone, right? Whether that's, you know, therapist, right? Or they need, you know, a higher level of care. Maybe they have an addiction, right? Maybe they've shared with you they've had some sexual trauma, right? They're specialists out here, especially for our kids, right? We have, you know, mental health practitioners who specialize in sexual trauma, who specialize, right, in trauma-informed care, right? It's available, but you have to dig into it. Right. So I want to encourage you all to really, really open the lines of communication, open the doors of conversation. All right. With that person. Maybe it's your niece and nephew. Mm-hmm. Right. Maybe it's that young man who visits your house, that young lady who's been visiting your house with your child. Right. It takes a village to just open up the door so we as a community, right? We as, a person in this society can definitely just dive into, okay, what do you need right now? What do you need right now? All right. So I hope that we can, you know, build from here. Next week, we're going to dive in part two, talking about, the impact of bullying on our children as it relates to despair, embarrassment, shame, guilt, and what we can do from that lens, right? Recognizing when bullying is becoming an overwhelming factor in a child's life that they contemplate taking their own life. All right. So that's all I have for this evening. Thank you for joining me. Tiffany, how are you? Hello, good evening, Shionte. Thank you for joining us. We will tune in next week with part two. Get out there and vote. You still have time. What are you all going home to watch the news? What are you about to do?
I got to find some tacos. Taco Tuesday. But then, yeah, I'm going home to sit there and put on my I got this little app on my computer, on my TV, where I can put up like 6 channels at once, all on the TV at the same time.
What?
So I'm finna have a bipolar moment and have all of the different news organizations up on this TV screen at the same time. So I can be sitting there and trying to see who's gonna predict what.
I'm not doing that.
And we're gonna stay prayerful.
I'm not doing that
this evening.
I just want to wake up probably in a couple of days, right? We'll get all the...
No, we're going to get... I think we're going to know tonight.
Okay.
I think all this hoopla about the stuff that ain't going to be counted, I think enough stuff that happened today is going to be enough to say it don't matter what the rest of them things say.
Yeah.
You don't count them, but it's going to be enough. Because it needs to be like a landslide in order for a man to, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
You know.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, great people. I will see you next week. And next week, we'll be talking about something different. Be safe and enjoy the rest of your week.
And everybody should know that's how love goes. It's good for the soul.
On her screen? Oh, because
I got.